I know this because you have the full history of the BBEE. We couldn't have a better person in this position as Commissioner. Thank you. We also have Mr. Stetto. Thank you very much. And Ms. Nguinia, would that be correct? Thank you for being here. And Ms. Naidu, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer. On that, I just ought to say one thing in my opening before we adopt this agenda. I have asked, in fact, before I had that, was away from Parliament, I had requested that the gambling subcommittee should meet on Friday of the week. I'm not sure why it didn't, but I've asked the subcommittee chair, Mr. Honourable Mkongi, to ensure that it meets this week so we can get those terms of reference in place as well as the business plan. And I'm mentioning this publicly, Ms. Ntuli, because it's on gambling. It's the gambling subcommittee that you see here. Mr. Honourable Mkongi, who else is sitting on it? I think the Honourable Hill Lewis, if I'm not mistaken, and the Honourable Williams. Of course, others may attend as they wish. We want that right on track. Thank you. Honourable Mkongi?
No, thank you, Sir President. I also wanted to say it on the record that I instructed after that meeting with Sir Sako that we needed to have a meeting last Friday. And I discussed the matter with Honourable Hillows and Honourable Williams. But in my surprise, the meeting was not organized. I was told that the decision of the meeting was saying that it should be on the 26th. So I wanted to be on record because I gave an instruction that the meeting should be last week. Thank you.
Well, the subcommittee is not a sort of informal committee. It is a subcommittee governed by the rules of Parliament. So please, we need to expedite that gambling subcommittee. Please get into action. If there's only two of you, go ahead. But move ahead on this, please. Please, we're appealing to you. We have a private member's bill there and the policy. Honourable Hill Lewis?
Does the subcommittee have secretarial support? Because I haven't received notification of last week's meeting, nor have I received notification of this week's meeting. I only received Mr. Mkongi kindly called me on Sunday. But I feel that it's not his job to convene the meetings and you know, whatever, do all of the admin support. So I just want to check, because it is important for our diaries that we do get proper notices in time and that kind of thing.
It was announced twice in the full committee. I'm not sure why it wasn't pursued, but it was announced. The only thing that wasn't announced is whether you would be meeting at 8:30 or 9:30. And we asked the Honourable Mkongi to fine-tune that arrangement. So who is the staff assigned to that? And don't be pointing across me. Yeah. Ms. Sheldon, and who else? Mr. Medima? Yes. No. As long as two members of the staff are there, that would be fine. So it's Ms. Madalani, the researcher, as well as Mr. Medima and Ms. Sheldon. All right? As long as you've got two of them, you move ahead. Thank you. And we'd expect that report in Monday afternoon to be processed on Tuesday. On that note, we have the apologies here. I am not aware of any apology from a committee member. Honourable Albert has just communicated with Mr. Hermans. Please remind him in writing. Who else? That's it. So, can we have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Let's expedite this. Honourable Williams, seconded by, the Honourable Kurnoff. And happy birthday for yesterday, Honourable Williams. I believe you reached your half centenary. Congratulations. Right. You know, and then you appear to be in fine form this morning. Thank you. Right. Immediately over to you, Ms. Ntuli, to deal with, I regard this as, you know, a major item on the platform of DTI's mandate. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. Chair, we thank you very much for the opportunity to address the committee on some of the issues relating to Triple BEE. The team that I have with me here, Mr. Steto, is responsible for our policy on Triple BEE in the DTI, and I also have a colleague here, Ms. Mwenya, who is a person in the DTI, but same as myself, assigned to establish the Triple BEE Commission. Chair, we have indicated the purpose of this session, but I think what we've also done in the correspondence that we communicated is to indicate that we are in the process of finalizing the establishment. So today we will not be talking about the details of where we're at, but I can assure this committee that we are in an advanced state and the minister will be able to announce officially when we will be opening our doors. And we are actually happy about the progress, because if you recall, we started working on establishing the commission in September last year, and we are at a point where we can see an entity. We have put together the all the things that are necessary to implement the Triple BEE legislation. But what we identified as important and key to this process is the stakeholder views. What we often do, I think, as officials and implementers, is that we tend to think that we know what needs to be done. And so we've taken an approach that we will talk to the people that are impacted and hear what is it that they say this entity should be doing. Yes, the mandate is articulated in the legislation, but I think it's important for us to understand what is it that people would like this commission to do in the market. And as we're looking at our stakeholders, Chair, we realize that, again, this is a legislation of Parliament. And this Parliament is the Parliament that will be requiring feedback from us on this legislation and the implementation thereof. So it is important that we engage this committee specifically to give us direction and to indicate to us what its expectations on the practicalities of this legislation are. And this is why we are here today, really, to solicit that input. But as we solicit that input, we also will be giving you a sense of what the other stakeholders that we have been engaging with have told us so far, and so that then we can then, within that context, move ahead and implement the legislation in a manner that at least to the extent possible will address the expectations of all of the stakeholders, including yourselves and the Parliament. Chair, for the purpose of those that may not have been part of this committee when the legislation was being processed, including myself, I have just done the background just so that we can just take it back to where it started. In 2003, the legislation relating to Triple BEE was passed. And this legislation was primarily intended to introduce transformation in respect of the economy. We know that in terms of the history of this country, we had policies that were intended to redress the imbalances of the past. And it is important to always remember that the Triple BEE legislation is one of those pieces of legislation which is a redress type intervention. Ideally, when we have a redress type intervention, it's supposed to be timed, meaning that there must be a point where it's not necessary anymore. So, but for anyone to arrive at that point where Triple BEE legislation, for instance, is not necessary anymore, it's going to be dependent on what we have done on the ground to ensure that we achieve that level of equality that we want to achieve here. So the timing of when, you know, it will not be necessary anymore will depend on the efforts that the country puts in accelerating that transformation so that we can say now we're at a level where we think that the citizens of this country are on an equal footing and they can now compete equally for opportunities and there is no need for a redress intervention of this nature. So the point that I'm making here is that people will always say, but when is this thing going to end? So I'm saying that it's going to take the involvement of every sector, every individual, to put the effort to make it work fast enough so that soon enough it's not going to be necessary. So that is a responsibility that rests on each and every one of us. So this legislation in 2003, obviously we learned over the period of the implementation that it is a framework legislation. It doesn't have any institutional mechanism to monitor. It doesn't have any concrete concrete provisions dealing with consequences for not doing certain things. For instance, there are targets in the codes, there are the points that you can get, and what it did, it ended up being a numbers game. And it impacted the sustainability as well because people were just chasing numbers, you know, ticking the right boxes so that they can then get a particular score and to get to a particular level. But that level is not necessarily sustainable. So because of the lack of monitoring, because of the lack of guidance as well, you know, direct guidance to the industry because there was no institutional mechanism. So the industry was left to actually guide itself for a very long time. And that resulted in discrepancies, inconsistency in how, you know, PPP is applied in the market. And that is something that we have learned during the review process that it actually took us backwards. Because when you chase numbers and you're just compliance driven, you're not going to achieve the intent. So the review then assisted us to actually identify those gaps, but also because of the lack of alignment in terms of how PPP is applied by even government itself, also led to a whole lot of discrepancies. And we know, Chair, that when we do a whole lot of regulatory work, we emphasize the issue of certainty. Our regulatory environment must create certainty for business to operate. And where there's no certainty, you certainly impact on the productivity, you know, the efficiency and all of that, because businesses can't make decisions. They can't make investment decisions. So I think that's what was created by the lack of institutional framework for the implementation of the PPP legislation. And the worst thing that then happened during that process is the funding practices that came with that. Because people were chasing numbers. So if you've got a black face, then it's good enough. It's okay. And that led to a whole lot of funding practices, people's names being misrepresented, companies' names being changed to appear a bit more African or a bit more black. And so it's like what you see is what looks like there is transformation, but underneath there's actually no transformation. So I think that reality then tells us that if that is the approach that PPP is going to be taking, even going forward, then we can forget that there will be a time soon in this country where we say it's not necessary anymore. So, Chair, just in the same as affirmative action was an important tool to address transformation in our workplace, in very strategic areas of this economy, the PPP is intended to do exactly that. So the previous legislation had gaps. The intention was extremely good, but the gaps were then being addressed in the amendments that were passed in 2013. These amendments were processed in this committee, and they then addressed the gaps that we identified over the 10-year period of the implementation. The amendments came into effect on the 24th of October 2014. The revised codes were then issued, and they came into effect on the 1st of May 2015. And then the minister has recently published the regulations, which are out for public comments. They are available on the DTI website and also in the Government Gazette. So basically the regulations will then give effect to some of the functions of the commission so that the commission is able to operate fully following the processes that have been outlined by the minister. Chair, with this amendment, then we have this institutional framework that is going to be responsible now for ensuring that the BBBE legislation is implemented and can be monitored on an ongoing basis. In terms of the legislation, obviously the minister is responsible for the overall oversight over the legislation, as well as, you know, issuing regulations from time to time. But there are other responsibilities in terms of the legislation that the minister is responsible for, such as exemptions and deviations, which I will cover in the other slides. So the minister's role is now properly clarified in the legislation. Then you have the BBBE Advisory Council, which is a council comprising of various members from various sectors and aspects of our economy who are put together to advise the minister, the president, the commission, and everyone who is responsible basically in the space of BEE on some of the issues that are emanating from time to time. They also can recommend to the minister certain changes if there are changes that are needed in the legislation to be proposed to Parliament. Then the BBBE Commission, which is this commission that we are representing today, which has been established to monitor and ensure that BBBE legislation is implemented in the manner that achieves the objectives of the legislation. So we also have what we call the BBBE Verification Professional Regulator, which is created by the legislation. At this point, the minister will then make a final determination in terms of who this regulator would be or who will play this function within these institutions that are created by the legislation. And this is particularly important because the verification process is actually very important in the BBBE space. The verification process is the one that actually determines the level ultimately. So if the process of verification is flawed, then the outcome that you get from there will also be flawed. So the integrity in the verification process is very important. So that is another agency, or rather a function that is being created by the BBBE legislation. The sector councils, these chair are the councils that are created in various sectors where there are sector charters or what we call sector codes. The sectors are then the participants in a particular sector where there is a sector code. They will submit their report to the sector councils, and the sector councils then will then be reporting collectively to the minister on the activities in that sector. So just to go to the definition basically of what is said to be broad-based economic empowerment. And maybe before I get into this, it's important to note that we actually having this task in the time when transformation is top on the agenda in this country. And I think it's important for us to ask ourselves questions to say, why are we here? You know, where university students are fighting about basic things that, you know, around access to finance, access to accommodation, you know, why are we still talking about those issues in this era? I think this is actually saying to us maybe also our approach to some of these things need to change, in a sense that maybe we are not actually getting where this country should be getting as quickly as we should. So if over the period of more than 20 years of democracy, we still with racist comments all over the media, transformation issues, lack of satisfaction in terms of the pace of transformation, then I think there's something wrong. We need to reflect. We need to see what is it that we haven't done right. And I can say, Chair, that in this little time that I have been involved in this space, I see that there's a lot that we probably could do better. And we're hoping that this engagement will also even give us more direction to make transformation a reality for everyone in this country. So the broad-based black economic empowerment in terms of the legislation is actually defined in a manner that specifically says that it must be a viable, it must be viable economic transformation, meaning that it should be something that can work, it should be something that can be sustainable, it should be something that will make an impact. So the intention is also very clear in the legislation. And it goes further to say all black people, and by all black people, the legislation defines that also properly and clarifies also the issue around the Chinese people that were here before 1994. And so those things have been clarified by the legislation. So black in this case would include black Indian colored, meaning African Indian colored, and also those small number of Chinese population that have been in the country before. And it specifically also goes into the issue of identifying women, workers, young people, people with disability, and more importantly, people living in the rural areas. So I think it's important to also note that I think yourself, obviously, as people that work on the ground with your constituencies, that there are certain, in fact, there are many rural areas in this country where the citizens will tell you that they still cannot see this BEE. They can't see this transformation because it doesn't even get there. So I think it's important that we bring that to the fore. But the legislation is very clear. I think the question is going to be whether when it's implemented, those things actually really get to those people at the end of the day. Okay, it also then indicates that you can do all of this economic empowerment through strategies that you can apply, which include increasing the number of black people that manage, own, and control. And I think there are debates around issues of control and issues of ownership. And I think the legislation is very clear. To make the necessary impact, we need to enhance the level where black people are able to manage, control, and own companies. Not only companies, but the productive assets of this economy. Because we need to make sure that there is equal participation in this economy. There are sectors of this economy that have been closed for black people for a very long time. And this legislation must be able to facilitate that barriers to entry in those critical sectors are actually relaxed so that black people can be able to participate in that. And if we're not going to deal with the issues of access to finance, access to capital for those black people, then we can forget that they will be able to get into those sectors and become viable economic participants. So there is a link in terms of all of these things that we're talking about, you know, with what you actually need to make the economy a viable one. Then we look at the issues of facilitating ownership and management by communities, workers, cooperatives, basically referring to collective structures such as your employee share schemes, your employee BE schemes and so forth, that we need to broaden the participation of black people to even the lowest in the value chain. The issue of skills development is articulated clearly in the definition, as well as the issue of preferential procurement, which is what we are aware of in the country because it's been implemented. Obviously, there is a need for us to make changes there and there. The issue of investment as well in black-owned and black-managed entities is also critical. So that's really what we are talking about when you're talking about triple BE. So every time we talk about triple BE, it's exactly a combination of all of those strategies that you can bring together to actually advance transformation. Chair, I'm going to skip a whole lot of slides, but I would take any question if there's any question on any slides. We've provided as many slides as possible just for information in some of the areas, but I think for the purpose of completeness, I will just cover some of the critical things that with the implementation the Act has brought about. As I indicated, that the general codes have been revised to align to the legislation and are now in force. And then in as part of that, Chair, you recall that the enterprises that are below 10 million in turnover are now no longer required to go around looking for verification and pay, you know, costly amounts to get verification certificates. They can now just do an affidavit to confirm that they're below 10 million in turnover. That was intended to reduce the cost of compliance. Chair, I must indicate though that the challenge is that some government departments are not implementing this. They still require the BE certificates from those small companies, and which is something that we are dealing with, where we need to ensure that it's implemented across, so that people are not denied opportunities on the basis of a paper that they need to pay for when they can actually just give an affidavit. And also, Chair, in terms of the sector codes that were gazetted, there were 10 sector codes that were gazetted previously, and the legislation gave an allowance for those sectors to be now aligned to the new legislation and to the new codes. And that alignment process has taken place in respect of 8 sector codes, which have now been submitted to the minister. The construction and the chartered accountancy sector codes have since been repealed by the minister because they have not been able to meet the deadline that was given even after the extension. So that is the status update on the alignment for sector codes with the new legislation. And in terms of the definitions, I've already indicated that the legislation gave more definitions to make implementation a bit easier. So you'll see that the accounting practice is actually defined extensively, and also looking and giving examples of what is it that we should be looking into, which gives the guidance to the Commission in terms of the practices that we should be looking into. And Chair, in terms of legislative alignment, I've already indicated that when in 2003, when the legislation was passed, there was an understanding that government will then align the various pieces of legislation that they administer in different departments with the BBB legislation. That really didn't happen. So over the period, we had BBB legislation operating in isolation, with other legislation just going in different direction, and we can never make an impact in that way. So now the legislation introduced what we call a trapping provision, which came into effect on the 24th of October last year. The trapping provision means that if there is any piece of legislation in this country that is not aligned with this BBB legislation, in the event of any conflict between the two, the BBB legislation will prevail. This therefore, Chair, means that the Commission needs to focus on this aspect and make sure that the consistent application is achieved. We will be looking at each and every piece of legislation that is administered by the other government departments and harmonize. Where there is no possibility of harmonization, certainly the BBB legislation will prevail. And I think that is the only way we can achieve the transformation agenda of this country, especially as it relates to the economy. Because transformation of the economy cannot happen in pocket if you want to achieve the impact. So in regards to the monitoring and reporting, the legislation clearly indicates who should be reporting, and the regulations that the minister has published are proposing a process and the frequency of those reports. And what has been taken into account in that process of developing the reporting mechanism is the simplicity in the reporting, and also the approach that we've always taken, that we do not want to impose reporting duties that are necessary. So what the entities will be required to report on would be what is necessary. So it will not have to be 20 forms that somebody has to complete and companies are going to employ people just to do their report. So it's very important that we do that, and we've tried to actually give that input to the department when they were doing the development of the regulations in this regard. The, in terms of the adherence to the Act, there are consequences now that are in the legislation for non-compliance, and this includes penalties And the penalties also, Chair, go to the core of business, which is the cancellation of contracts. So meaning that where there has been maybe misrepresentation of BBBE status or level, then that can be a ground for cancellation of the contract. And Chair, what we see is that this is going to be any contract, irrespective of the size, whether it's a small contract or a big contract, for as long as there has been misrepresentation, and there's evidence of that and there are findings on that, that contract must be cancelled. Because if we do not do that, then we do not deter people from actually misrepresenting their BE status. So this is one critical area that is in the legislation now with these amendments, which we hope is going to assist the country to achieve. But also in terms of the exclusion from doing business. So if you have been found to have violated the Act in that manner, then you could be excluded for a period of 10 years, up to 10 years, from doing business with government. Chair, the penalties though, I think some of the penalties in terms of how we look at things is that probably would be a last resort. You know, I think the intention really is to get people to actually do things right. So if people have done something wrong and they show the willingness to change and to do things right, I think they should be allowed that opportunity, because we can only achieve the impact if we allow people to do the right thing. So in applying those penalties, I think that will be core to our assessment. I've already covered this slide in terms of the minister's power. These are the functions of the commission that basically inform what the mandate of the commission is. You'll see the general one there around promoting and supervising and overseeing the adherence to the Act. And the critical word there being in the public interest, meaning that it doesn't have to be an issue that has affected a particular person, but if in the public interest is an issue that the commission needs to look into, the commission can get into that and deal with it in the public interest. The other aspect, which is the important aspect, is the collaboration between private and public sector to promote and safeguard the objectives of this Act. This function, we see it as actually the paramount function, because if we will not be working between ourselves to ensure that there is collaboration and working together between the private sector and government in advancing this Act, then we will not be achieving the results. And we are also mandated to receive complaints and investigate complaints. And these are the process for that is articulated in the regulations that the minister has published. We also are required to advocate and also facilitate access to opportunities as well as educational programs. But key to the functions again, Chair, is the function for the commission to register BE transactions. Over the period again, you know, there is no central point where you can say where are the BE transactions. So because you don't know where they are, you cannot monitor them. And that has been a challenge in this country. And I think Liso and the team have been actually battling even in looking at what the impact of BE has been. The baseline studies that were conducted certainly give some sense of how it looks like. But we cannot be sure of whether that is actually the right sense that we are getting. So the opportunity that we have this time around is that where all BE transactions, and by transactions we mean transactions that relate to all the five BE elements of ownership, management control, skills development, enterprise and supply development, as well as the socio-economic development. So all those transactions that are within the threshold that the minister will determine in the notice will be registered with the commission, so that we are able to monitor also where those transactions are going. And the problems that are currently being experienced around BE beneficiaries not benefiting anything in real terms, but in the books of companies they are mentioned as a BE scheme or something like that. So this time around we'll be able to monitor that and see whether the economic benefits ultimately do flow to those people. So I think we'll move away from paper BE to real BE and real transformation if we implement this correctly. So the other aspect is really the issue of corporate governance. as well as the function to ensure that the public is aware of the triple B requirements and ensure that they are assisted in complying. So I'm going to just summarize some of the issues that have come up, and I think these issues for us are an indication of where we should be going in terms of the mandate. Our mandate will always be broad, but I think like any other entity, we have to prioritize so that we can make the impact in the right areas. And I think the engagements of this nature are going to assist in terms of how we can prioritize. So I must indicate that when we started the last year in September, we have written letters to all of the state-owned entities in this country, and we have introduced ourselves. We have requested meetings to engage with them so that we can create that relationship of working together in making sure that we can then implement the legislation properly. We've also written to the business formations of this country, the chambers, the associations, and we have also extended an offer to meet with them. We have done this consciously. We visit them at their offices so that it's not inconveniencing. So we've taken an opportunity and time out to do exactly that, so that we can understand if there are any challenges and what are the challenges that we're currently experiencing in respect of implementing the revised codes, implementing the changes that have come through. Then when we then implement and oversee them, we oversee them within the context, and but also are able to assist them in implementing the legislation itself. So we have since had several meetings with the SOEs that have come back. Some are in schedule. I have not listed all of them in the slide, Chair, but we have met with the likes of Telkom, Eskom, AMSCO, and several meetings are coming through as well. And we've also established a working relationship with the Triple B Advisory Council, also for the guidance in terms of some of the issues that they would like to be dealt with. And we have had one-on-one meetings with specific people that wanted assistance in terms of how they can apply the act and how they can apply the code. And I must say, Chair, that these one-on-one meetings are very useful, because I think what we are getting is an opportunity to assist the country to do the things right. And that is, I think, in our view, where we should be spending a lot of our time in assisting companies and the government entities to apply BEE properly and consistently. I think that will be our first choice. And obviously, subject to your input, you will tell us if we're in the wrong, but we think that in terms of weighting, I think that must receive a big weight. So in terms of the issues that the stakeholders have raised, I have not categorized them deliberately so according to the stakeholder, but we have summarized the issues that have come out. And these are the things that are consistent coming out of the stakeholders. The one thing is that they are concerned that if the commission is not well resourced, it will not be able to assist with this transformation. So we will come back again another 20 years, and then we'll then be in the same position where we are. And the other thing that came out consistently is that there is a perception that is being created and that has been created over time that Triple BEE is for the elite few, and they want us to dispel that in our implementation. So our oversight role is going to be the one that actually focuses on all of the elements of BEE, and also to make it as broad as possible, because that's the intention. Visibility is also one thing. Education and awareness, they've raised it as top on the agenda. And the one thing that they've said is that they expect at least clear and consistent communication from us as government, because they want to be able to know what to do. And they've indicated that there have been mixed messages around the Triple BEE, the codes, and they want that consistency. So we see that as the mandate of the Commission, to ensure that there is clear communication, there is clear messages that are coming out in respect of Triple BEE to prevent confusion. Chair, the other issue that came out strongly is the issue about the unreliability of the verification process. The stakeholders are saying that because of lack of oversight, of the verification agents and the participants basically in that space. They see a whole lot of manipulation of data to get to a higher level of BEE. So the issue of lack of integrity in that process needs to be addressed. And so that is what has come up, and that's what we see defining our mandate as well there. The verification certificates, a lot of entities have said that they are not sure if the certificate that they receive is even worth the paper is written on, if you look at the lack of integrity in the verification process itself. So the level two that you might see on the certificate, because it's informed by the data that has been given to a verification agent, if the data is flawed, the level is flawed. So they really worried about it, especially state-owned entities who are supposed to be assessing controls on that basis. The township and rural economy, they raised significant concerns about that. In respect of the sector charters and the sector codes, they have requested that the monitoring should go into the details of ensuring that sector codes and sector council processes are not utilized as platforms for collusion, because then that would then limit competition in the industry, and that will raise prices for consumers at all times. So it's important that we monitor that constantly. The issue around the consistency within government, I've already alluded to that, but I think what has come out clearly is that people want to see BEE benefiting the poor. So if BEE cannot benefit the poor people of this country, then it's not the right one. So that has come out very clearly. If the BEE initiatives that are put on the ground cannot create jobs, then we're not doing that. Then the supplier and enterprise development process then also informs exactly that, because if we don't create enough suppliers to then start participating in the value chain of the economy, then again, you know, because we can't speak about transformation and expect things to happen, but we don't put the tools and the systems to allow for that to happen. So supplier development, enterprise development, will lead to more companies, job creation, and the poor will benefit. So I think that has come out very strongly across all of the stakeholders that we have met with. So I must mention that in this case, a number of SOEs have indicated to us that in some instances they can't find black-owned, women-owned companies, for instance. I'll tell you, for instance, in certain sectors, because these are sectors where black people have never been involved. Previously, you know, companies would just have black women companies, maybe for catering and stuff like that, things that are not core to the industry, for instance. So, but they now want to make that area inclusive, but they can't find that. So then our skills development area and our supply development area must link to creating the skills that are required for people to actually enter those sectors where black people didn't have the opportunity to be in before. So that is going to be critical, and that has come out very clearly. So the stakeholders want clarity. They don't want confusion. They see that there is lack of clarity in terms of how we communicate on the trumping provision. They see lack of clarity when it comes to the black empowerment schemes, the number of black empowerment schemes that are done by companies, and some of them are not schemes that are advancing transformation. So they want clarity on what kind of a BEE scheme will be the right scheme. So we're hoping to develop some small guideline on that issue. And also on the issue of the once empowered, always empowered, they want clarity on that. And those are the things that I think we will develop guidelines on as the commission to assist the process. So in terms of the the some of the SOEs, they have expressed the lack of buy-in for transformation initiatives by participants in those industries, but also some of the conflict that would arise between boards and CEOs in terms of the implementation. So they've raised that as a challenge. So the issue of buy-in, hence we are saying that if we engage all the relevant structures and we can achieve consistency, then I think we'll minimize the level of conflicts that arise from that perspective. So there's also an appeal for the Commission to look at the qualitative aspects of BEE, moving away just from just the look and feel, but to the content. There are concerns about the tendencies that are happening in some of the companies, where, for instance, when they appoint black senior managers, the content of that job actually automatically changes, and the person is basically just a face but does not actually get to make decisions in respect of the company. And also the way positions are created, they're not in the core of the business, they're on the sideline of the business. And the intention of including blacks in the management of the company so that we can actually get more people to understand the operations of the company and the industry, and they can actually move on to create their own businesses and actually compete with the very same company if that is a possibility. So they are looking at that. They want us to look into those issues and deeply. So the alignment between our employment equity legislation and the Super BEE, especially when it comes to skills development, has been emphasized. The one important thing, Chair, that I must mention is that the stakeholders have said there are a number of barriers for small businesses, black businesses, new entrants. And these challenges are consistent. Access to finance, access to markets. You know, they are consistent, and every year we speak about them. And then on the other side, we speak about transformation. If we don't deal with this, we cannot expect to see transformation. So we need to make sure that the transformation happens across. When people go to a bank to ask for a business loan, the credit policies of companies should not be in their nature exclusive, because then that will prevent inclusivity in the economy. So those are the kinds of examples that have been given to us. And these are the other things that we just summarized, just so that just based on some of the issues that have been brought to our attention as well on a one-on-one basis, that the Triple BEE legislation has brought about a practice that says that if it's a BEE transaction, then it's like it happens in an island. So corporate governance goes out of the window. So people structure this contract in a way that you are a shareholder, but you are actually not a shareholder. So your rights as a shareholder in terms of the Companies Act, they actually get thrown out of the window by you signing a contract that actually makes you to agree that as much as you are a 10% shareholder in this company, you will not be voting. You will not be coming to meetings, so you actually just collect a paycheck for your dividends when the dividends are issued. That is, if the dividends get to be issued at the end of the day. So the complex nature of these structures now is making BEE more complex, and is making fronting to be more sophisticated. So that is what we are required to do, to look at those structures. When the BEE deals are being announced, they are saying that it's important that the Commission actually just check the deal to see if the deal actually is a real BEE deal. So that monitoring role, without necessarily saying that the deals must receive approval, but that we can monitor that and say, but this deal is not a BEE deal, because you have excluded this, there's no economic benefits flowing, because there are locking provisions as well that lock the participants in a particular contract, and they're not getting anything, and delayed benefits. For instance, you'll only be able to start benefiting economically maybe after 10 years or 15 years. So in the meantime, the company receives a score and a level that says it's actually transformed, but it's not. And so those are the things that they want us to look into so that we can actually just bring a real transformation about Chair. The issues around lock-in provisions, we're seeing them, they are a trend, and I think we must bring them to a stop in a sense that if there is a lock-in provision, it must be a lock-in provision that is reasonable, that actually is advancing transformation. And the issues around corporate governance, like I said, a whole lot of companies do not even, a lot of shareholders do not even know what's happening. The BEE schemes that are created for employees, some employees do not even know that they belong to the scheme, because there's not even a check that comes out maybe to show that there is a benefit that arises from you being a shareholder in this company as opposed to just an ordinary worker. So we need to bring about just the reality of all of the schemes so that we can achieve transformation. Chair, given the issues that the stakeholders have raised, we have just looked at some of the immediate things that are informed by what is needed right now and what has been coming to our offices. I must indicate that we have been very busy in the short period that we have been up. We have been very busy in terms of the people coming through. There's a whole lot of issues that have come to us that are indicating to us that there is a need to facilitate alternative dispute resolution. A number of BEE transactions, BEE schemes, are in the court processes, because the shareholders have taken each other to court, so they're still sitting and waiting for a hearing at a particular time, and so forth and so forth. That is not in the interest of transformation. So we see an opportunity to create an alternative dispute resolution that is going to be cost-effective, that companies do not have to pay a lot of money just to resolve disputes between shareholders or disputes between the employee scheme and the company, and so forth in respect of BEE. But we have seen a number of them that have come to our offices, that matters are in court, and in fact, especially the BE partners are frustrated because they do not have the funds to actually fund the litigation costs that are there. So there is a need to help both parties really to resolve the dispute as quickly as possible and find an amicable solution. And then the other thing that comes up here is the advisory services that we will be offering advisory services upfront for transactions, so that we can advise whether the transaction is okay or not. And we can point out some of the things that are typical that should not be in those contracts. And so we'll be providing that as a front service to all companies. We've indicated that in the initial phase, we'll be providing that for free. But I think as we go along, for the people that can afford, we probably will have a nominal charge so that we can maintain our operations as well. The education awareness is, as I said, based on the stakeholder calls, we have identified that as critical. The partnerships and collaboration, we've already spoken to a number of entities. Chair, in terms of the Act, we are called upon to involve other regulators in this mandate. We've identified the companies and IP Commission, the CIPC. We've identified the Takeover Regulation Panel. There's the SIU and CEDA and the Companies Tribunal. These are the entities, when we looked at their mandate and what they're doing, are relevant to the mandate of the Commission. Especially the Companies Tribunal, we have engaged with them to offer the ADR that we are wanting to have to offer to the companies to resolve their disputes as quickly as possible. And the ADR platform will be offered by the tribunal. We will be concluding the agreement for that to happen so that they can assist companies to resolve disputes. In terms of the consistent application of the Act, again, like I said, we will be looking at ensuring that the trumping provision applies properly and across the sectors, that there's consistency now that is achieved as intended by the legislation. Chair, we'll also be looking at the systematic investigations. There are issues that have come to our office that look like they are common practices. So we'll be looking at them systematically as opposed to one-on-one and try to actually just change the way things are happening there. So these are just the immediate things, Chair. And just in terms of the education and awareness. We've already, like I said, are engaging with stakeholders through information sessions as well as one-on-one meetings, and we will be having a conference to kickstart the education and awareness program. The conference will take place on the 29th of March in Midrand. So that will then kickstart our education and awareness program. We think that that should be the first touch in terms of just raising awareness. So, as I've indicated, BBBE must be able to improve equality, create jobs, and reduce poverty. And this will be our driver. So if any BEE scheme is being implemented, we must be able to see to what end. If it's not going to that direction, then we should be able to ask ourselves questions about its validity. And here we also need to focus on shifting our approach, you know, as previously the approach was people looking at, you know, ticking the right boxes. We need to look at the quality of these transactions. The quality of these transactions, in fact, leaves a lot to be desired. Some transactions look good when they're being announced, but if you look into the details of the transaction, they are not worth the paper they are written on in terms of transformation. The issue of consistency and transparency is important. So let me emphasize the issue of transparency. The level of confidence in BBBE, based on our assessment, has been made primarily by the fact that a whole lot of BEE issues have been dealt with not in a manner that is transparent. For instance, the legislation now is very clear. There are general codes. And then where there is a sector code, then you will then work in accordance with the sector code if you are in that sector. However, the legislation then also allows for those entities that want to exceed the general codes or the targets that are set in there. There is a transparent process that they must apply to the minister for the minister to give them the permission to exceed. And when that permission is granted, it will be in the government gazette. So everyone will know this SOE1 has received an exemption or permission or the right to deviate from the codes. So, and Chair, I must emphasize this, that in our engagement, stakeholder engagement, this has been one of the things, because people felt that, you know, maybe government departments, sometimes they change this tender, has this, and we don't know what informs that. All right. So now there's a process now of transparency that has been brought into the picture. And I must say, Chair, that will bring confidence in how BEE is implemented. So that it's not Zodwa today waking up and then I say, no, for this particular tender, we want you to get 70% ownership. It can't be just random. It can't be inconsistent. We need to provide certainty. So I think that is one critical area. And I think if all the entities will apply the act as it is, then we should be able to achieve some benefits for this country on transformation. So I must say that it is a duty for all of us. So we are expecting good cooperation with the industry players, with the SOEs, with the government departments that are supposed to be implementing this, and to make sure that we can actually achieve that. So there are a number of issues that obviously we expect that people are debating. The issue about the revised codes and the people being concerned about their levels now going to be dropping from level 2 to level 4 or level 6. I think we will be managing that process as well between ourselves and the department. We are working with the stakeholders to help them in managing that process. Some changes are not avoidable. Some changes are going to happen because the legislation has changed and the codes have changed. But I think what is going to be important is how we work together with the industry, work together with the public entities to make sure that we achieve that. So let me stop at this, and perhaps we can be guided by yourself in terms of, you know, what other areas you wish us to emphasize. But we really would appreciate your input and direction in terms of where we should be going with this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ntuli. This is one of the issue areas you could just
cover briefly before we engage. There are a number of points raised by stakeholders and a number by yourself. But just listening, it would appear as if one of the real challenges is the development of the supplier chain, companies being able, and there's almost an indirect skills transfer to others who may. I wonder if you could address this area, because this has come up several times in what you've said, and then we'll go across to the members.
Sorry, this is a question to you. Do we have to be in before they close the doors, or can we join later?
No, we can join later. I've made it as close as possible purely because of the seating. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Let me just allow Mr. Stetoye to just explain this part and also just the issues around the codes and the changes and then now the enhanced focus on supply development, and I'll add if there's anything that...
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chair. I think in your question, though, Chair, you've clearly articulated really that's the focus. And I think that's what South African business is starting to have to grapple with. In the past, you used to have a situation where you could ideally support a black-owned business and not necessarily have to buy from the very same business. The businesses used to talk supply chain and supplier development. However, when it comes to BEE, it was not a more stringent approach to focusing on that. So I get it, the changes really, and what business is grappling with is just to understand the value proposition of doing business with a black business. It's not about just BEE, but it's about improving their quality, how they supply to yourself and the like, and that's what most businesses are grappling with. And we've tried to relax some of these requirements as it pertains to smaller businesses. But then with a big business, with turnovers more than 50 million, we expect them to start walking that path. And this is really the big issue. And there's a whole issue also linking local content and local value creation. And saying, you know, we don't necessarily have to continue to import. We could consider local suppliers, and it makes good business sense to do so. And so really that's what we are really focusing on and what businesses are grappling with. And as the Commissioner put it well, those are the focus areas also, because that's what's going to make BEE work. Yes, ownership will do much, but once we can have established black-owned businesses, that's the way to really to go forward.
Thank you very much. Now, I do want to recognize members' hands, but I'm appealing to all of you. Keep it short and sharp. Perhaps leave the commentary out. So I'm starting Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Williams, Honourable Albert, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Gisterhazen. I'm coming. Honourable Mkongi, Honourable Whip, Honourable Kalako. Now, let's keep it short. You know, there are 8 of you, that's 16 minutes already. 2 minutes each.
2 minutes. Was I first? All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner. It's nice to be able to call you Commissioner, not DDG. Look, I mean, there's a huge amount to discuss in this area, and I'd like to have another engagement with you, but in the brief time that I have, let me just put 2 points to you, which I really agreed with. Firstly, I thought you said some really refreshing things, and I like your approach. And I really support you in your call for more and more businesses in South Africa not to just view BEE as a compliance exercise and a tick box exercise, but to actively engage and commit to the process of redress. Again, last year in the deliberations around the investment bill, we heard from a lot of the private sector how confusing it is to deal with SOEs, all of whom have a different empowerment policy. And so I was a huge fan at the time of the trumping clause, and I'm glad that it's now been implemented. But even now, in the last few days, you will have seen in the papers how ESCOM has an empowerment policy which is not in line with the generic code at all. It's, and they do not, so far as I know, have have the your permission to deviate from the generic code. So the trumping clause is not being implemented. So I know you've now written them letters, but I'd like to ask you and re-emphasize that the trumping clause is really important and it has to be enforced. And please be very strict with granting deviation from the generic code, because it is so confusing for businesses to deal with a local municipality where they live, plus a national SOE, plus a government department, and every one of them has got three different policies. So that's the first thing. The second thing is on compliance for business itself. I think part of the reason, I mean, even in our own jobs here as MPs, our parties, you measure our performance with complex spreadsheets, which sometimes feel like the PE codes of good practice, kind of like hundreds of pages of compliance that you have to do. And it starts to become, because it's so complex, it starts to become a tick box exercise. You need to make sure you've done all of the things. And so my call would be, with the increasing focus on real empowerment and redress through supply chain transformation, we must, whenever possible, try to simplify the compliance process for businesses so that I just get the sense that many people say, this is so complicated, I'd rather get this rating agency to do it for me, and then they don't engage properly with empowerment and redress. So simplification for me is a hugely important subject. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hill Lewis. Yes, thank you, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. First, I just want to say how pleased I am to hear that there is an end to BEEE. But before we get to that end, I think we should get to the beginning. Over the years, there seems to be a lot of avoidance and evasion by certain sectors of our economy. And one of the things that I'd like to see is, what is the actual picture of transformation? Who owns and controls our economy? And we haven't really got that clear picture. And perhaps the next time you come, and I hope that we spend a whole day on this and not just a few minutes before we all have to rush off to the budget. So we have a clear picture on who owns and controls our economy. Because it seems to me that there hasn't been much transformation whatsoever. And I think that the private sector and everybody needs to get really involved with this, because it is a process that we have to go through as a country. And we can't just keep postponing it or avoiding it or evading it. We need to go through it as a country together so that we can get to the end of transformation and then move forward from there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Elvin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for the presentation. I would just like to know, you know, you're going to have access to a lot of information that didn't exist before. You'd be able to discern trends, see where things are going right or wrong, whatever the case may be. And I suppose, and I hope that you will provide some feedback on that for us as they become available. Would you then also take these trends to the minister, for instance, to change, you know, using his powers to actually change codes and adapt it as the situation arises and needs to be adapted, so that we can make an evidence-based decision on actually eradicating poverty, because this is what this is supposed to do in the end of the day. It's not supposed to just, as you said before, enrich just a few individuals. And in that respect, I also would like to ask, in terms of your engagement with various stakeholders, whether you're engaging with various organizations in the social development sphere as well, because that is part of the points that can be achieved, is contribution in developmental aspects. If you're going to do that, who will you see and how will that engagement take place going forward? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good to see you, Commissioner. I think you've said something profound today, which I think is quite a departure from what we've heard previously, in that BEEE needs to have a strong focus on job creation. And I totally agree with that. Because, you know, it's not, you know, you can't have broad-based empowerment by simply saying that because a black person is in management and earning a nice salary, you know, per year, that is broad-based. And I think that the country is growing frustrated with BEE because it appears that it's the same group of people that keep benefiting. I mean, we've seen, for example, you know, the president's son getting a contract from to supply Eskom with coal. Not the first one, not the second one, but now the fourth one. And that starts to delegitimize the real ability to actually redress the injustices of the past. But what BE doesn't speak to is how job creation is actually going to be facilitated. So there is no points allocated for a company that employs 100 black people being paid 10,000 rand a month. But there are points allocated for a senior manager who's earning 100,000 rand a month. And I think that that's problematic, Commissioner, because unless there is a ability to recognize companies that can employ and train and skill black people, specifically even from rural areas, because I'm still unsure of how BEE can benefit people in rural areas as it stands, it's going to be more of the same. You said something in the beginning that what business needs is certainty to thrive, and I think that that's something that most of us agree with. But the perception is that the goalposts on the codes keep changing. No sooner have you complied with the old codes that you are now receiving a set of new codes. And I think it was profound, Chair, that we spoke to a business that is 62% black owned under the old codes, black owned, and is now going to drop three levels under the new codes. And that is problematic because they're now having to spend large amounts of money, a black owned company, to actually prove that they are black owned. It's quite ludicrous. And then I'd like you to comment on the issue of preferential procurement, because I think that is one good opportunity for the state to really broaden economic empowerment. But, you know, in certain industries, we have to accept, Commissioner, that there is currently very little black involvement in that sector. And let's take, for example, the steel sector. There are only four producers of steel in this country, of which three are listed on the JSE, and of which I don't think any are actually black-owned. So companies that are steel fabricators doing business or wanting to apply for contracts to the state cannot get awarded points for preferential procurement because there's simply no opportunity for them to buy from black-owned businesses. And I think that there's a gap that needs to be addressed there, Commissioner, at looking at industries where there is no black participation, not excusing it for not having such, but how do we mitigate, or how do we also not unfairly burden businesses that actually can't meet those specific requirements? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Esther Hazen.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner. I just want to say something on the stakeholder engagement as well. The mandate of this commission is to engage the public and awareness and stakeholders. But on page 8 of this, or slide 8, construction and chartered accountancy sectors have since been repealed. On 18 February this year, it was in the Government Gazette that complete new compliance for this too was advertised, and this must all be implemented by the 1st of March. So that gives this sector only 10 days basically to implement fully new BEE compliances, which is, I think, very unfair. And apart from the short notice, I think the time also the timing was also bad, because most companies at this time of the year finalize their year-to-date figures and etc. And this is significant budget adjustments, everything to do this. I don't know when this was written, this presentation was written to say that it's been repealed with the new amendment already being advertised in the Government Gazette. As we were, you know, we were left in the dark, or these companies were left in the dark with this, because Minister Davies has already signed this, the implementation of this, in the beginning of December last year, but that's about 11 weeks ago, and the companies are only given 10 days now to implement it. Thank you, sir.
Yes, I'm sure we'll get a clarification on that, Honourable Yester Hazen. If I remember, this is about 2 years old. But let the Commissioner herself clarify that one. Honourable Mkongi.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stato will remember, when we were still in the student movement, we had a structure that was called the National Youth Commission. And we had big expectations on the roles of the Youth Commission. And one of those roles that was a challenge was the enforcement and also the right to subpoena people who do not implement the youth development policies. We did not win that struggle up until it was an establishment of the National Youth Development Agency. But I believe in this particular commission, we have put those powers on them. We gave you a right to speak up with other regulators to assist, you know, investigation and other related issues. Now, in your own guidelines, what is your strategy to deal with misrepresentation and funding based on the mandate? That is the first one. The second one is who the responsibility is for enterprise development and supply development. Because in your presentation, you said that the companies are complaining that they can't get these people. What is our responsibility as a state? Is the responsibility of those companies to get these people and develop them through skills development and other related issues, and we transfer them to these complaining companies? Whose responsibility it is to do that? Because I believe some of the businesses now, they are going down because they are using money for other issues other than the core responsibility of their own businesses. Thirdly, since you have been presenting, you said you will be going to do this, particularly on the drafting of these guidelines. I'm worried we took, Mr. Stato, we took more than 3 years to come with the National Youth Police. It was a long time, you see, and I'm afraid if we're going to do the very same thing, that we're still going to do this within this particular commission. The question of the development of the, how quickly can we have this, these guidelines, and then we can go through them in Parliament and see whether they're actually good. If you look at stakeholder comments, they are actually saying these things are not in the Act. These things that they are talking about, they are proposing that they must be done. It is a gap within the Act. You see, which are calling for a quick drafting of the guidelines that reinforces, you know, the mandate of the Act. So when do you think we are going to get this particular? Because I believe you do have some teeth. The last one, the question of making these acts talk together or to each other, when are we going to do that? You know, there is a plan to deal with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mkongi. Honourable Kalako, the whip.
Thank you, Chair. I hope maybe, Chair, we will again revisit this discussion. There's a lot which I think the acting commissioner have given us. And I must commend them, you know, with the shortest time they've already done a lot of work. I must agree, I think all of us will agree that the main objective of all of this act is creation of jobs and transformation of the economy. So to me, to hear for the first time, you know, because it was not clear in our government that actually the aim is to create black-owned independent businesses. So far, we're not able to account since we introduced the BEE, how many jobs have been created by these black-owned, if they are there. Of course, we have just realized now after 20 years that all the charters of BEE didn't work, precisely because of what you are outlining here. So I'm happy now that you have identified that problem. And also I would want to emphasize, you know, on the trumping clause, that is the key to be implemented. Especially we find this realignment across government spheres, not only between departments. There's a lot of chaos happening in provinces and municipalities around procurement. In fact, they flout all this, what CTI puts and what Treasury expect them to do, they flout all those things. So to me, that is important. I think I'm very happy that both Honorable McPherson and Honorable Lewis agree. I think we must commend DA that at least there must be some measure of socialism in the system. But I think in your mechanism, you see, where you talk of, because where we have been lacking in actually making sure that this goes down, and let's be honest with ourselves, we have created, it's not a perception from our people, we have created an elite of people, one and the same people benefiting. In fact, you have been very correct when you say that perception that those who are powerful, those who have, they always benefit. It's there. We must deal with that. So I'm very happy that you have a mechanism to deal with that problem. But Chair, I think the other thing which we must always correct, which it doesn't sit comfortable to me. I don't have a problem when the members make an example that the son of the president getting, don't care about that, I don't have a problem. They can make that example. But they must not create an impression and perception that those who are relatives are sons and children of people who have been involved in the thick of things in changing this country in the struggle. They are actually lost, they are actually not to benefit to what is happening independently. You can't tell me I stayed in Robben Island for 10 years and I've been in exile in the bushes, and then when my kids get opportunities, you say, oh, it's because Kalago is in parliament. That is wrong. That is wrong, completely wrong. And you must differentiate that. No, they are corrupt because Kalago's son, Kalago's daughter got something from government or something closer to government. I think that let us not create that perception to South Africans. So I wanted just to clear that is something which is always used, that thing. Thank you.
I think you've raised a very important thing. You know, there's a word that is often forgotten here, broad. We must not you know, sort of emulate what has happened elsewhere where this was attempted and create elites. That really will destroy the purpose of the act itself. But I think the other thing is that we cannot forget that the whole idea was to de-racialize the economy, hence the ownership has to be large. We cannot allow this to become like the land question. 21 years later, what has changed? 21 years later, what has changed in the mainstream of the economy? And I've got Ms. Sheldon just to pull out something where it shows that in terms of just training, not ownership now, the top 125 training companies in the U.S. spend a mean 5.8, call it 6%. And that is a country where they never had a skills deficit. Now, where there is a skills deficit, why not 10%? Why not? And why not a larger? But the question I would like to ask is in respect of the black industrialist. What sort of synergy is going to be effected here between the BBBEE and the Black Industrialist Program, Commissioner? Thanks.
We'll try to be as quickly as possible, given the time. But Chair, I must just indicate to the members that this was just an engagement session with Parliament, just to get your views. We will be coming back to present to you what the strategy is. And when we do that, we'll also give more data, you know, emanating from our baseline studies and so forth that have been conducted before to see where we at in terms of transformation, and so that you can see whether the things that we say we'll be doing will actually attempt to move us from that to that point. So we'll be coming back on that. But for now, Chair, let me give Mr. Steto and also Ms. Uwenya an opportunity to respond to some of the questions that have been put to us there.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick one on regarding the issue raised by the Honourable Member. You know, because I've also noted a couple of media correspondence this weekend speaking about industry court unawares of sector codes being repealed. And I want to clarify to the Honourable Members that this process of aligning sector codes was triggered in 2013 already. June 2013, we wrote a letter to all sector codes and said, guys, we're changing the primary legislation that you are based on. And because of that, you need to align. And the deadline set was a 12-month period. When we got closer to that, there were concerns that they're not ready, so we had to extend. I think further to that, we've had close to 3 extensions that ultimately led to October 2015. And in all of that, the minister's been clear in his notices to say he will consider repeal if alignment is not achieved. Because you can't have a double standard where other sectors, because they fall under a sector code, are implementing older codes. Now further to that, so ultimately it led to the 17th of December repeal of the construction and the CA charter, because their constituencies within that collective failed to reach consensus on issues. Just as the department, just to highlight, we had further even engaged the actual sectors and set in those sessions where there's emerging businesses and there's established business, and we tried to see what are the gaps resulting in them not reaching consensus. But unfortunately, our hands became tied because a sector code is a sector-based initiative. And it needs to be driven by the sector. And if there's no consensus regarding peculiarities within a sector that warrant a sector code, we really can't impose further. So really, that has really been the process. And noting from that, because now these sector codes are repealed, we can't facilitate a situation where we say, linked to old financial periods, you will apply a far outdated code any further. So we had to obviously toe the line, and unfortunately, from the signing of the actual notice to
to us sending it through 2,000 printers and the processing, we were unable to obviously then communicate in detail. But what had happened is that the actual sector council charters had communicated to members that we have failed to align. And this has resulted in participants within those industries, both in construction and in the CA charter, where industries had started from November last year implementing the generic code. Now, obviously, the question can always be asked, was it due, did we give sufficient notice? In our view, we stand by a point to say more than 2 years is sufficient notice of an intention to align. And the generic has been in implementation now since 1st of May this year, so there is sufficient basis for people to compile their own certificates. And then all certificates before the 17th Gazette are valid because they were done within law. So they will continue to recognize them for the next 12 months. But unfortunately, the law has been repealed. I'm sorry, Commissioner, I'll just speak on that key issue in my view. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. I was hoping that you will cover also the issue of enterprise development in terms of, I think, what Honourable Nkongi has talked about, you know, especially about the responsibility, whose responsibility it is, but also as well as the issue of preferential procurement, just in terms of the application.
Thank you, Honourable Nkongi, for clearly highlighting. It is the responsibility of business because they are the customer, they buy. They have their quality standards, they have their issues that, you know, they need to meet demand for. So, but what we highlight, it is the responsibility of business. And let it also be clear that many businesses have taken on that responsibility and are really proving to us that a lot can be achieved. I don't want to quote names, but there's a whole lot of enterprise and supply development initiatives that are really creating value locally and, you know, given the chance and opportunity and with the Commissioner's input, because people will be reporting back to her on these initiatives, we would like to come back and highlight these issues further. And just on the issue of job creation, yes, we've highlighted two things, you know, this enhanced recognition in terms of skills development, that is to facilitate, you know, entry into work opportunities. And then further to it, we have a provision where we say you get an enhanced recognition or enhanced consideration as a business if you create jobs. And we've put it as an empowering supplier provision. But, you know, I do agree with the Honourable Member that we could further promote and discuss this further and clarify and advocate on this very important point because, you know, BE needs to be about job creation and opportunities. So on preferential procurement, you know, yeah, the lack of black suppliers, we understand this is sometimes perhaps an issue, but we've noted that with the private sector, you know, taking the responsibility, they able to sort of like create such. I have one example in the auto industry. One major manufacturer, OEM, and they have a good example of where they've actually facilitated the creation of this business and to obviously supply them with a very important part, a component in their vehicles. So yes, in certain instances you won't find the necessary suppliers, but we view it as a joint effort between private sector and ourselves to help, you know, find, you know, where we could intervene in such a situation. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I will hand it to comments that you raised. With regard to the compliance results, we in the structure have identified that you need to have a research and analysis and report unit. This unit will be doing our market and trend analysis, and the results that will come thereof will also form part of our report, annual report to the minister, and the report will also be tabled within this house. Because we feel that it's important, as the Commission has pointed clearly, that we don't have stats currently. And our main goal will be to make sure that we collate the statistics. The nice thing about the Act is that it's actually encouraging everybody to report to us and give us what is the state of transformation within their entities. So we'll be using that information as well, but also we're looking at linking up with the JSE so that we can see when the transactions are taking place, and then we can also use that information. And the part about the social development organizations, I must say, within our engagement, we have not really identified those, and thank you for raising that. We'll also be engaging with those organizations and see what can come out of that. So we don't have a strategy for that one yet, but we'll be looking at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, yes, Commissioner.
Yes, Chair. Chair, I'm just going to add to what Mr. Stato has talked to, especially in regards to the sector codes that have been repealed. I think it's not a plain smash. It's something that we will be working with the industry on, again, just to ensure that, you know, the fact that they now have to revert to the general code, that process can be managed as smooth as possible. Yes, it's not easy at the moment, but I think also the participants they expected this to happen. There was communication about it, but I think our responsibility is to ensure that the impact on the market is really not disastrous. So we'll be engaging with them on this issue. So just in regards to the guidelines, Honorable Mkongi is correct. The guidelines are important. The stakeholders that we met with, most of them said that the codes are complicated. And because they are complicated, then you need somebody from outside who is a consultant maybe to help you with it. So when you often bring somebody from outside, it doesn't necessarily integrate things into your business, because you bring somebody, then it's as if the codes are done as an aside. So the complexity in this has been acknowledged, and we see this as our responsibility as well as the Commission on a consistent basis to ensure that we simplify the codes and make sure that, in fact, I think when these codes are to be revised in the future, I think our engagement with the DTI has been to say that the codes in themselves must be easy to apply so that you don't need guidelines thereafter. So that's where we're going towards. But right now we are working on developing the guidelines, and the technical guide as well has now been completed, and then I think the department will be releasing that for the market. In terms of the supplier development, just to add to what Mr. Stetra said, yes, we acknowledge that the responsibility is with the industry players themselves to develop the suppliers. We do acknowledge again that there are certain instances where they also need to be assisted because of the complex nature of a particular industry where there has not been any black people at all. So I think it is important for government to also play its role to assist in actually making the suppliers available as well, because we have government entities that have been established to develop small players into real participants. Like your CEDA, we have met with CEDA exactly to do that facilitation, because what we're thinking is that this is not a role for one person, and also we cannot just leave the mandate only on the industry to try and develop enterprises. So I think government must also come there to assist. Just in terms of the, I think the question around our strategy on misrepresentation and fronting, we will come with that. We will use also the input here now to refine now our strategy. Our strategy has been developed, but as I said, we wanted this engagement so that when we come back, we have also incorporated your input to our strategy. So we'll come back with a presentation on that issue. And just in terms of the trumping provision, I indicated that we see this as a top priority on our mandate to ensure that it's implemented. And in the entities that we engaged with, there is a reality. One, the SOEs are confused. Others say that they are afraid that if they are going to deviate from a particular legislation, when they are being audited by the AG, they will be conflicting in terms of, you know, what they've been complying with and not complying with. So it is important for us to provide clarity to the market
on this issue. So that is why it's top on our agenda. In the same way that the minister has attempted in this instance with the sector code to create that alignment. If you are not aligned, then it's not applicable. So similarly with the other legislation, if the legislation is not aligned to the BBB legislation, then that legislation, to the extent that is not aligned, that part should be redundant, because now the BBB must prevail. So we need to make sure that we implement this fully, and that is top on our agenda. It is important for us to do that. The issue, Chair, about the synergy between our work and also the Black Industrialist Program is that the Black Industrialist Program is a critical part of the BBB legislation. You'll see that in the legislation it says that there is a responsibility to facilitate the creation of incentives to develop this industrialist so that then we can have jobs. So the creation of those black-owned enterprises emanates exactly from such interventions. And the difference with the Black Industrialist Program is that now it's targeted at black people. Yes, there are incentives for manufacturing and so on and so forth, but this is now advancing the cause of BBB. It's within the legislation. So that alignment is very clear. But Chair, the one thing that has been emphasized is that there is a responsibility on the Commission to also monitor how the Black Industrialist Program is going to be implemented. And the reason, Chair, is that already we see the opportunities for people that would want to front, because now to access it, again, we're going to be seeing fronters, people that are going to be looking like they own 51% of the company when actually they don't really own it, but they just want to be utilized to access that. And Chair, in terms of just the approach on this misrepresentation and fronting issues, we will look at it both from the people that front themselves deliberately, because there are those people that are deliberately fronting themselves, and those are the people that are taking this economy backwards. Because when people are deliberately fronting themselves, whether you are being fronted as a top manager or a CEO of a company, but actually in real fact there's no impact that you're making on the economy, then you're taking away an opportunity of another black person that could have been in that position and actually make the change. So we want to look at this thing, you know, across the board. We look at the fronting people, the people that front others, but we also look at those ones that deliberately front themselves. But the main person that needs to be protected is the person that gets to be fronted without their knowledge. So that is the vulnerable one that requires protection. But we do need to speak loud about this thing, people who are taking us backwards as a country. So just in terms of the, I'm just going to check the, if we have addressed all of the, oh yes, I think the issue around the data, because I think Honorable Albert, you referred to, now we will have access to information. That is good, because in terms of the Act in 13G, there is requirements for companies to report on an annual basis to the Commission. But what we'll also be doing as a Commission, we'll be producing quarterly trends, trend reports that will track transformation on a regular basis and on an annual basis. But also what is important is that the legislation allows us, when we receive the reports, to interrogate them, and we can even do site inspections to check if the information that is in the report is actually what is happening in the company. So that is what is different. That will then create at least the opportunity to create credible data on transformation, because then it can be interrogated and we don't just use the figures as they are. And I think let me stop at this, but I just want to agree with Honorable Hill Lewis in respect of the simplification of the BBB legislation and the codes is very key. And as part of our strategy, we've been discussing even ways of making it easy. It should be easy. It's not easy, then you know, we can apply it. I remember when we were battling, you know, I'll give an example, as government departments, how we were battling to just do employment equity. The, just the,
the complexities around it, up until you get it right, then that's when now, you know, real transformation happens, because now you've mastered the template. So we need to make the template simple so that you don't have to spend 80% on the template and 20% on real transformation. So we do agree with you, and we are looking at various interventions, even the creation of the simplified apps that companies can have access to if they do not have access to them, so that they can really implement the legislation properly. Chair, let me stop here. If there's anything that we haven't responded to, Chair, it's not intentional. Chair, let me just say this last point. In respect of the, for instance, other companies have come to us and said, in this area, for instance, we will not be able to achieve this target. But we can actually achieve more on this one because our industry is like this. So what we are doing with the department is to look at what are the other permutations that can be employed within the codes to allow for some of those things where in reality it's not possible for them to achieve the target that has been set, but they can actually give you more than what you have set on the other side. And that will assist, Chair, because at the moment, remember that we have permutation for multinationals on ownership where they can give an equity equivalent, all right? But for local companies, we also need something like that, where, for instance, where they can give you more on the other area, we should be able to allow for that, so that then we can make the quick wins in the relevant areas and make the impact. So we are engaging on that with the different departments and the industry. Thanks, Chair.
Commissioner, thank you very much. I did see a hand, Honourable McPherson. I'm going to ask you to speak to it, but we're not going to have it responded to now. We are expecting the Commissioner to return to us. We'll have a 3-hour session at that particular point. So record it, please.
No, that's fine, and I'm happy for the Commissioner to come back to the issue of, broad-based job, employment or opportunity versus, management, appointment. And I really, urge you to consider that and to bring something back. The second point, Chair, is I'd also urge the Commissioner to look at, industries where there just is no black ownership or no black business at this point in time. I hear what you're saying, and I think that that's a fair point, but the reality is that there's not a black-owned steel company that's going to be set up, overnight. So I think that that's important. And then just the third thing and final thing, if the Commissioner can come back to us on, is the issue of first-time entrants. I understand that the cap is 50 million, at the moment, but I'm a bit unclear of can an individual get five equity opportunities at 10 million rand each? That for me seems problematic, and how is that being calculated, and how is the abuse of that issue being limited?
Right, remember this is an exploratory meeting in terms of the acting commissioner, who we know will soon be the commissioner, all things being well, and her team that are here. But it also enables us to get out the legislation, to backtrack on it. Honourable Esther Hazen, if you're one of the folks who doesn't have the tracking back from 2012, 2013 in particular to now, please let Mr. Medema know so we can get those documents for you, so you can see the journey that it has taken so far. And anyone else, I don't know if the same applies to you, Honourable Williams, who else doesn't have this, because this, is really an important mandate. Does everyone have all the documents then? Anyone who doesn't, over the last 2.5 years, please let Mr. Medema know. Can we leave it there? Right. Now, our next meeting will be next week as a full committee, but I really want to emphasize, we have noted here 9 o'clock on Friday for the subcommittee. I'm not sure why it's I was told it was 10 o'clock. It should be at 9 o'clock, because there are Manco meetings after that. Unless there is one of your members is attending another committee. Would that be right? Because we do have other programs on. Thank you very much for being here, and we'll see you next week as a full committee. Thank you, and thank you very much to Commissioner Ntuli and your team.
Thank you.